Welcome back to the Discovering Forestry podcast. My name is Corey. I'm one of your hosts alongside the star host with the most, Arbor Joe Aitken. Here for another compelling conversation about trees. Joe, I had to throw a title like that in for you today because spring is here. I was traveling all over Pacific Northwest this week. Things are blooming. Got to catch up on a couple other podcasts I listened to, and I'm thinking, you know what? Joe is one in a million. So how are you?
Yeah. Spring has sprung. You know, Corey, when you say that, we've been in this industry for a long time, and we all seem just, oh my God, it's springtime. Like this is the first year it's ever popped up like this. And it's different every year within a week or two. But why are we always just so all of a sudden like, oh my God, it's here? Surprised. I don't get it. And I'm guilty. I'm not pointing fingers. I'm just as guilty. Oh, next week, then boom, everything's in bloom. Yeah. But other than that, you know, you're right. It is good. Everything's fun. Some good projects going on. Just keeping our head above water and just trying to make sure that we do the best we can every day and to get through this next quarter unscathed.
Well, I'm with you, and I kind of smile at the sentiment of everybody taking note of spring. I think it could be all the pear trees and some of the crab apples where people are seeing them and going, oh, it's spring. Whoa, when did that come from? But it's almost like people forget the last 5 months we just had. And it's good to get people outside. Obviously, when this episode drops, it will be Earth Day. And then later in the week, it will be Arbor Day. And that'll lead into today's conversation fairly well.
You know, when we look at, and I think we're all guilty of it, we look at arbor culture on the podcast and in general, and it has to be, we have to realize that when we're discussing it, 99.9% of the time, we're discussing modern arbor culture. You know, obviously arbor and culture, that, you know, old words, but we always seem to talk about the now. And the now is within the last 100 years. You know, there's been a lot of changes then, but believe it or not, people cared about trees before that.
They cared about,
you know what I mean?
Yeah, no, you're right. They cared about trees. They celebrated trees. And it's something that obviously, as you say, we're in the present. All we can do is look at the modern way of doing things. But I think let's take a step back. Let's look a little bit further into history and maybe do a deep dive on trees and maybe where one of the original Arbor Days came from, which I'll just keep it moving if that's okay on this, Joe.
Yeah, and I'll throw one more quick thing in. What kind of brought me to thinking about this is that obviously one of the projects I'm working on is we took a tree down on Belle Isle, and it was thought to be over 300-year-old oak. So what was interesting is that if you look back prior to modern arbor culture, that island was inhabited by Native Americans. So they wanted to date the tree to make sure that we paid respect to the previous owner of that tree than us in today's modern arbor culture. So we need to really look at this history pre-modern arbor culture. And you're right. I think it would be exciting and fun to dig into that a little bit deeper.
Yeah, well, let's do it. My son got a handful of books this winter that were given to us. And one of them, it was very fitting. It says, "Thank you, trees, the celebration of Tu B'Shvat." So I did a little bit of research, looked into it a little bit more, found out a little bit about it that we'll discuss today with our guest, and ended up finding somebody that was able to connect us. So I'm really excited, a little anxious, a little nervous for this conversation because it's so needed that there's an Arbor Day that's been going on for over 1,000 days. And I just found out about it.
1,000 days or 1,000 years.
Pardon me. 1,000 years. And I just found out about it. Joe, you might've known about this before, but I'm thinking this is going to be new content to a lot of people.
I did not. And a shame on us for not again, it goes back to modern arboriculture, tunnel vision. Trees, Corey, we've talked about trees have been around for millions of years. You know, it's not, trees aren't new. And there are cultures that have celebrated trees long before. And highlighting that and giving thanks is going to be a fun thing to do today.
Yeah. So without further ado, we're going to bring on our guest. Our guest is Rabbi Gelman out of the Front Range of Colorado. And we're going to talk today about Tu B'Shvat. So, Rabbi, welcome to the show. How are you today?
Great. Thanks, Corey. Thanks, Joe. Great to be here. And I'll just quickly note your point about being surprised when spring comes. The Jewish community on Monday night is going to start the holiday of Passover. Pesach, which is, according to biblical law, a spring holiday. So this is when members of the Jewish community also start thinking about the spring. And of course, we're always surprised. I can't believe Passover's here so early this year. And so we have that same, I guess, deer in the headlights look when all of a sudden things start to sprout and it's time to get ready for Passover.
Thank you for reassuring that we're all in this together, because you're right. It's like, oh my God, I got to get this ready. I got to do this. Oh my God, things are blooming. Oh my God. Yeah. So fantastic. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
So Rabbi, can you tell us a little bit about yourself? Maybe just a brief once over on your history or any love that you've had for trees or the environment, especially as we enter this Pascha season.
Yeah, sure. Thank you. I've been in Denver for almost 2 years. Moved here. It'll be 2 years in August. Moved here from Houston, which is a very different climate from Denver. And moved here. I'm the rabbi of a congregation of a synagogue called the Denver Kehillah. The word Kehillah is the Hebrew word for community, so the Denver community. And that's what I do during the day. I teach classes. I meet with congregants. I try to grow the congregation and support Jewish life in general here in Denver. I've been a rabbi my whole professional career, upwards of 30 years now. I love every minute of it. In terms of my love for trees, I would say that moving to Denver has definitely upped my outdoor game, for sure. We don't spend a lot of time outdoors in Houston, because especially in the summer, which is very long in Houston because of the humidity. So when our family moved out here, we started spending a lot more time outdoors, as you can imagine, hiking and exploring this beautiful state. And so my love for the outdoors and appreciation for nature has definitely grown and increased in ways that I really, really appreciate since I moved here.
You know, by moving into a climate that has more trees, it's interesting you say that. It's only been a couple of years and you're realizing how amazing trees are. I think that's a common way to put it for a lot of people. Now, if you look at someone that grew up in an urban environment, who the only tree they're used to seeing is the one that when they walk out of their apartment that they bump into before they get in their car. Do you think that has a long-term effect on your overall appreciation for the outdoors and trees? And I know it's a little off topic, but I'm like, they kind of hit a point. Like, if you're not, if that's not what you do or you see every day, how can you learn to appreciate it? Yeah, that's all I'm going to say.
It's also interesting. I spend part of my day studying with various members of my congregation. I happen to have a study session with an individual who has a cidery and is an expert in apple trees. And you should talk to him too. He's really incredibly knowledgeable, and he's taught me a lot about apple trees and how that works and different types of apples and what apple trees need. He actually pointed out to me that it's probably the case that in ancient Israel, there were no apple trees. because apples need a winter, I learned, and there isn't much of a winter there. But he did tell me that in recent years, Israeli arborists have actually managed to, I guess, to genetically modify apple trees so that now there are apples that actually do grow in Israel.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's neat.
Not our topic, but cool.
Well, it kind of ties into it. So the holiday or the and correct me if I'm wrong, but the holiday or the celebration of trees in the Jewish faith is called Tu B'Shabbat. What is this all about? Because as we're tree people, we're looking at, oh, Arbor Day is coming up. But this is something that the Jewish faith has been doing for a long time.
Yeah, so our Tu B'Shvat, and I'll explain the meaning of that in a moment, is we find it in Jewish literature dating back to the second, third century. Way, and it probably is much older than that. It certainly is older than that in terms of its being recorded in writing in Jewish legal sources. It's that old. And that's found in the Mishnah, which is essentially the first code of Jewish law. And Tu B'Shvat is the Jewish holiday that occurs on the 15th of the Hebrew month of Shvat. The reason it's called Tu B'Shvat, which I guess in English you would spell T-U, is because the Hebrew word Tu, which is made up of the Hebrew letter Tet and the Hebrew letter Vav, has a numerical value of 15, so it's the 15th of the month. Letters in Hebrew also have numerical value. And sometimes it's called Tu B'Shvat, because that's how you would just pronounce those two letters together. And sometimes it's called Chamisha Asar B'Shvat, which is the way you say 15, the 15th of Shvat. So that's sort of the just etymology. It doesn't explain why that's a special date for trees, which we'll get to, but that is just sort of definitionally what the word means in the book that your son got.
Very cool. Oh, that's good to have the base knowledge for it.
So I'm glad we're going to expand this because my brain's going to 15th. 15th of what month? 15th April, May, June. Is it every month? Every month, 15th?
So it's the 15th of the Hebrew month of Shvat. Now, the Hebrew months don't always match up to the same English months. That's because of a quirk of the Jewish calendar. But for example, this year, Tu B'Shvat is going to be at the end of January. So it's normally in that time. And that's because of the rainy season in Israel, which really starts around, let's say, end of September, beginning of October. And so by January, you've had a good, hopefully, some good soaking rain, and the roots of the trees are taking. And that's really where you could point to growth, and you could focus on the growth of the trees. Some also suggest that by that time, you're almost through, about halfway through the winter. And so you're headed towards the spring already. And so it's a good time to talk about trees. But from a Jewish legal perspective, the origin of the importance of this is in order to date the age of the trees. And the reason why age, as you mentioned earlier, Joe, there was a 300-year-old tree, but from a Jewish perspective, for certain rules, we're concerned with is the tree 3 years old, 4 years old, or 5 years old? And it does not require a full, let's say, calendar year. After Tu B'Shvat, we could consider that a year has passed if the tree was planted within a certain amount before that, and then you're into let's say, the fourth year of the tree. So there are some legal rules that are based on the age of the tree, specifically whether or not you're allowed to eat the fruit of those trees. And Tu B'Shvat is called Rosh Hashanah Le'ilanot, a Hebrew phrase, which means the new year for trees. And so once it passes, a new year has begun, and you could then age the tree accordingly.
Well, that does kind of make sense because even though a lot of us aren't practicing the Jewish faith, or at least Joe myself, a lot of fruit trees won't flower, bloom fruit for a number of years after you put them in the ground. So that's kind of interesting to hear that folks had their eye on this thousands of years ago.
All right, the first few years of the tree, I guess they're not bearing much fruit, but if they do, you weren't permitted to eat them. The fourth year of the tree, the fruit you have to actually bring to Jerusalem to celebrate it. And then from five on, you could make fruit salad or, whatever you want.
It was a free for all, but it had to be 5 years. That's pretty amazing.
Pretty cool, yeah.
So it's almost like primitive dendrology. Growth rings. And now we could do a core sample and see how old a tree is, but when you're talking about edible, it's kind of interesting that yeah, it's the tree that you're restricting what you can do with that tree until the tree becomes of age to provide what it was designed for, which is pretty amazing.
Yeah, it could be a function of giving the tree a chance. It also could be a function of a recognition. Ancient Israel, there was a strong reliance on rain. Now we have irrigation and we could sort of overcome nature a little bit. But in ancient Israel, that was not possible. So it was almost like a dedication. We're going to dedicate the first 3 years of this tree in recognition of divine assistance. To get it this far, and then we'll celebrate that in year four in Jerusalem, and then after that, it's not quite a free-for-all in terms of allowed to do anything. There are very strict rules in Judaism about wasting and about cutting down trees unnecessarily, and a deep respect for nature. But from that point on, post the fourth year, once the fifth year begins, then the family or the farm was able to eat or to sell the fruits that were harvested from those trees.
Well, and this is great. And I heard you say something about recognition. So we recognize, or the day recognizes that the rain has come to basically give the tree its nourishment, comes from divine, the Lord, the Mother Nature. What I was reading a little bit about this day of celebration, and it talked about taxes or tithes with some of the fruit harvest from the year before. Is that anything that we can touch on? Because in the Christian faith, we talk about tithing, so giving 10% of our salary or whatever towards a donation. Is that similar at all in the Jewish faith for this holiday?
So the Jewish faith is the source, the Bible, I should say, is the source for this idea of tithing. There are many different types of tithes besides tithing income. There was also tithing on produce. And the Jewish tithing calendar is a 7-year calendar. And depending on the year, sometimes the tithe had to be brought to Jerusalem. Sometimes the tithe was given to the poor. And the year will also be dependent on Tu B'Shvat, whether it's the first, the second, the third, in order to decide what year of tithing you are in. So it has to do a lot, as you said, Corey, with tithing. So it's about when the fruit is permitted, and for the life of the tree after that, the tithing of the tree as well.
I got another question. So as we talk about our discussion, we talk about fruit and harvesting. And I'll beyond that, I'm thinking my brain's going to traditional forestry, not just harvesting fruit, but harvesting the tree itself for goods. Does that fall into the same process that a tree can't, you said about being removed. Can a tree be removed for timber or for art or anything? Does that fall in the same guidelines?
That's a great question. Judaism has a what I would call a sanctified practicality about nature. So the answer in short is yes. A tree can be, I think the word you use is harvested or cut down, chopped down, to use for timber to build homes or to clear an area to build homes. But what we're not supposed to do is chop down a tree for no reason. So that's very broad, and maybe I have a reason that someone else doesn't think is a reason. But we're at least commanded to pause and say, why am I going to take down this tree? What is it for a good purpose that people or that the general lay of the land is going to benefit from? I would say that, you know, sometimes is over planting and over forestation, and sometimes you need perhaps, I'm not an expert on this, but you need perhaps to take down some of those trees for the health of the other trees. So all of these things are legitimate reasons. What Jewish law wants us to do in all area of life, and here too, is to pause and say, okay, what's the purpose of this action? What's the good of this action? And if there is no good of this action, then we should leave the tree, because otherwise it's considered wasteful and we're destroying something that in traditional Judaism, we believe God put on this earth.
I love that you said that, because it wasn't my intent to get you to say it, but you're following the direction with modern arboriculture is practicing right now, where when we show up on a site, one of the first things is, why do you want this tree removed? And that's a common practice now in modern arboriculture. And I think that there's a span in between there that we should have been asking this that we didn't. I think it's coming back. There's, you know, it's a living organism. Why are we removing it? Does it need to be? And I know right now that I could tell you hundreds of trees that are still standing because an arborist made a comment, why is this coming down? And they're like, well, I don't know. Well, it says, well, I'm not taking it down because it doesn't need to come down. So it's great that we started out this way and now we're kind of going back to it. That's pretty exciting.
It's really interesting. In the biblical source for this notion of not wasting actually comes from the rules of war, where we would think that all the rules are set aside because war is war. And the Bible says, when you besiege a city and you feel that you need to destroy the trees, don't do that so fast, slow down, think about it. And then it says, because it compares a human being to a tree, which is a sort of radical thing the Bible does, sort of saying, you're not gonna waste a human life so quickly. Don't waste the life of a tree so quickly.
Wow. Well, it is a living organism. And I think, I'm probably an extremist when it comes to being a nerd about trees, but being a living organism, I think the only thing that, because trees react to external pressure and they're moving and growing together with their buddies, the only thing difference is that with lack of central nervous system, you know, so a tree can respond to sound, sunlight, and other tropisms. So it's growing, it's alive, and it's going through cycles. And I think that if we looked at that in a bigger spectrum, I think more trees would be saved. Their tree preservation would be a more talked about term.
Well, and that ties right back, Joe, as we're coming full circle on the holiday of celebrating these trees and just having an understanding and an appreciation for maybe where they're from or the laws that might exist that keep them there. And Rabbi, I'm wondering, as we're talking about these trees that are being saved and celebrated, how do people celebrate this holiday? Do they go out? Are they eating fruit? Are they going to the bar crawls? How are they celebrating this day for the trees?
Yeah, great. So there are really interesting celebrations for this holiday. It's not one of the holidays that ordained in the Bible to celebrate, which normally mark an important historical moment in the history of the Jewish people. Tu Bishvat is, as I said, mostly a legal rule about the age of the tree, which affects the things we mentioned. But certainly in modern times, the holiday has become something which is celebrated. So, for example, There's an organization in Israel called the Jewish National Fund, and they're responsible for forestry in Israel. And on Tu B'Shvat, over 1 million people in Israel participate in tree planting activities. It's also interesting to note, since Tu B'Shvat is about growth in trees, many organizations in Israel will lay their cornerstone or do the ribbon cutting, so to speak, on that day, on Tu B'Shvat, to again celebrate growth and new beginnings. It's also a time where people will partake of the seven species, the seven fruits that the Holy Land, that Israel is known for: wheat, barley, grapes, figs, pomegranates, olive, mostly for the oil, and dates, mostly for the honey. So we do those things to connect us to the land, and specifically connect us to the land of Israel.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
So as our listeners are out there, and that, you know, that is greatly an American thing as well, with Arbor Day obviously being founded in the great state of Nebraska, is the planting of trees, and it's kind of the appreciation and the recognition. But to hear how much ingrained in the Jewish culture trees have been for all this time is pretty remarkable, and something that I didn't know about prior to today's conversation and doing the research. So yeah, that's exciting.
It's important to remember that, you know, early Jewish history was all agricultural. That's the way people made a living, and that's the way people fed their families. Everyone had their own homestead, and they farmed, and or agriculture, or animal farming as well. There are multiple tracts of Jewish law that are just dedicated to the laws of agriculture. And the way you measure in Judaism, the way you measure how important something is how much law has been written about it, right? So you have, and those tractates are not practical so much anymore, because most people are not farmers, but they are still studied, right, as part of the regular course of Jewish studies, because it's part of our culture, it's part of our history. It's interesting, and I also just want to note that I mentioned at the beginning that we're about to begin Passover. One of for those who are familiar with Passover, you may know that the centerpiece of the holiday is the Seder, is a festive meal with a lot of symbolic foods and activities. Tu B'Shvat, in about the 16th century, a group of Kabbalist mystics developed a Seder, a similar meal for this holiday, for Tu B'Shvat. And instead of the Passover type of foods that are eaten, these specific foods that I mentioned, which are connected to Israel, were eaten. Mystical texts were read and studied. Four cups of wine were enjoyed, just like they are at the Passover Seder, also a connection to the ground and to growing. So Tu B'Shvat took on this festive opportunity to celebrate growth as well. And the rabbi sort of riffed off the well-known Passover Seder to create a Tu B'Shvat Seder celebration.
Wow. That's pretty cool.
I like the wine part.
I was going to say, Joe probably, why stop at four?
I'd sip on some wine. I was thinking that, when we talk about this and the love and the understanding that the value of forestry, it connects. Today's conversation connects both urban forestry and forestry. Now here, Corey, correct me if I'm wrong, we got into the habit of separating, well, that's urban forestry and this is forestry. No, you can't do that because it's in this. Trees are trees. Just because the sidewalk ends doesn't mean that tree is any less important or vice versa. And this is a great discussion to realize that, there is a greater good for trees that we need to recognize on a day-to-day basis.
You said it, Joe. It's all about kind of tying things together, having that appreciation for that greater good and for why things are here, and just to be present and intentional about the decisions we make, whether it's towards people or trees. So, Rabbi Gelman, before we sign off, is there any final message that you want to leave our listeners with, or ways that they might learn more about this holiday?
You know, I'll just share with you a story, a short story from the Talmud, which is the Jewish collection of wisdom, both legal wisdom and I call it folk wisdom. And this is a beautiful story because it really points to Judaism's concern for nature and the value, which is sometimes lost on people, that Jewish culture and Jewish law places on it. And we'll explain that at the end of the story. So the story is about a man who's walking through the desert. He's hungry, he's thirsty, he's tired, and he comes upon a fruit-bearing tree, which affords him shade, and he sits underneath, and he finds a stream of water, which is probably why the tree grew there, and he eats some fruit, and he drinks of the water, and he's finally rested in the shade. And when he's about to leave, he turns to the tree, and he says, "Oh tree, oh tree, how shall I bless you? Should I bless you that you have fruit and that your fruit is sweet? Well, you already have fruit, sweet fruit. Should I bless you that you have plentiful shade? You already have plentiful shade. Should I bless you that a stream of water run beneath you? You already have a spring of water that runs beneath you." So he says, "All I could do is bless you that all the trees planted from your seeds could be like you." And I love that story because it reminds us of all the things that trees give us: shade, food, protection. But it also reminds us that trees come from trees. And so that we have to be careful about the trees that we do have to make sure that we have trees later on. And there are other stories, really beautiful stories, in the Talmud about trees and people interacting with trees. And so I'll just leave you with this, with this thought and this reminder that the focus on Tu Bishvat becoming a day in which Jewish people really celebrate nature and highlight the connection and highlight this notion of not being wasteful and being very thoughtful about how we relate to everything on the planet.
Wow.
Love it.
Yeah, well said. Rabbi, thank you so much for your time. Thank you for your wisdom, the stories, the information. Joe, myself, our listeners, we're grateful for this exposure to something that we should have learned about a long time ago. So truly, thank you.
Well, thank you for taking the time to talk about Tu Bishvat and to educate folks. It was really a delight for me to be with you both.
Thank you, sir.
Hey, great topic today.
Yes, and lots of good information.
Yeah, probably one of our best yet.
If you enjoyed the podcast or have topics you would like to discuss, please send them to discoveringforestry@gmail.com. And please hit the subscribe button and tell a friend.
Thanks, guys, for tuning in. Until next time, I'm Joe.
And I'm Corey.
Signing out.